fans in a lot of ways. I know how they feel. They're great. They're loyal. They want a bang for their buck.
All it took was 48 hours. 48 hours. There was a jersey on the ice, and then all of a sudden it was Bruce, there it is. Yes, change is afoot in Canucks Nation, and the boys are going to dive into what the future looks like for this team. Let's go.
Hold up. Hold up. Hold up. Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.
And we are back officially. Welcome, everybody, back to the LarshCast. It has been a while. In fact, when I was grabbing my microphone, it was mold growing on it. Can you believe that? That's how long it's been in there.
People said the same thing about Jim Benning for the last 8 years.
No, the mold right away. The mold isn't because of it taking so long. It's because you got some rank ass breath that just grows shit.
Oh yeah, okay.
I was gonna say maybe you just gotta brush your teeth, bro.
Well, the Canucks certainly brushed their teeth recently, getting rid of Jim Benning, John Weisbrod, Travis Green, and Nolan Baumgartner. Bringing in Bruce Boudreau, who I was advocating for a while. Actually, in fact, one of the last episodes that we did, me and Nav on October 19th, after the fourth game of the season, asked the question, is Travis Green the right fit for this team? We saw flaws in his coaching style. I mean, it was clear as day, this team is better on paper, should be unleashing like offensive potential up and down that lineup, and they weren't. And lo and behold, it's only been one game. How much can you change for the, you know, after one morning skate? Probably not a whole lot, but I was at the game and you guys watched the game. I noticed some changes. You know, I noticed they were sending the defenseman into the on the forecheck, being that fourth guy, and they were rotating. There would be a swing in the neutral zone as they pinched in the offensive zone to cover for that D-man. You can notice these changes coming into the neutral zone from the D zone. You didn't dump and chase, for fuck's sakes. Making plays throughout the neutral, like, this is what we all wanted to see with this team. And so I'm so fucking excited. I can't. Obviously, we're going to start swearing more because it's Bruce Boudreau. Oh, fuck. You know, like, how are you boys
first
doing?
What's presser. Going on? Oh, man, I'm so stoked here. First of all, it's just a breath of fresh air. And like you say, I wasn't at the game last night. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but I caught a good portion of it. And it was just nice to see. And by the way, just in terms of your comment about them winning the first game, that's like the staple of a new coach. If you don't win your first game, the team's in real trouble. So, I mean, that's at least like a sign of life. They got a new coach. There's changes, and there might be more changes coming potentially. But it's nice to see them playing with energy and passion again. It was fun hockey to watch because it looked like they were having fun. Mm-hmm. And that's rewarding to be a fan. And I don't think we've seen that in a while. So I don't know.
Fun is a key word there. Cause that was one of the most fun games I've ever been a part of as a fan, as a Larshider, you know, in any hockey arena, in any sporting arena. That atmosphere was just wild. And a lot of people are asking, did I start that Bruce, there it is chant? I didn't start it. The guy in the Larshider section was a few rows below that started it. But that first one didn't pick up. So obviously me and my damn loud mouth, I just took it and ran with it and blew it up. And obviously that was one of the greatest moments last night. But Nav, how was your feeling after one game of Bruce Boudreau? But for, you know, I know what you're going to say. Jim Benning is gone. So how do you really fucking feel?
You know, okay. So let me tell you something. Last week, I'm sitting there at work. I think it was a Boston Bruins game. And for the first time, I think in my life, I forgot there was a Canuck game on. It was a third period. I'm like, oh crap, the Canucks are playing. That's never happened to me. And you know what? That thought came to my mind when the Canucks are playing. I'm like, oh, fuck it. I don't care. I've never been that way. I've been the guy at work that walks around and tells people, hey, don't tell me the score because I've PVR'd it. Or 10 years ago, I recorded it on my VCR. I'm going to go home and watch it. I haven't cared about this team, which is something I've never had.
Yeah.
Last night, for the first time in a long time, I've cared. Mm-hmm. And I think it started not even with, Benning got fired. We knew that was coming. Green got fired. We knew that was kind of coming. But to me, it started at the Stan Smeal press conference.
Yeah.
Almost the anger and the disgust in Stan Smeal's face talking about what's happened in this team, right?
Yeah.
And then, what's his name? Francesco Aquilini's not a good speaker, but it was nice to hear from, like, you know, he's not a speaker. He's not a public speaker, but he kind of spoke to me.
For a reason.
For a reason. And he kind of came on and said, this isn't acceptable. I appreciate that. Then Boudreau came on.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not sure how great he's going to do or how bad he's going to do. It was a breath of fresh air listening to that guy. He's funny. He's comedic. He's joking around with the media. And the game, I watched the game last night. I was excited to watch the game last night.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And you're right. I noticed they were playing to their strengths. Now, it's only one game. They're playing the Kings. The Kings are a decent team, right? But I
well, they just beat the Oilers 5-1, right? So,
but I heard something that Craig Button said last week on the Donnie and Dolly show.
Yeah, he's like, I know what you're going to say.
I don't understand is the Canucks are not a defensive team. They're, yeah. they're six defensemen. Besides the top two, the other four are bottom defensemen. So why are we playing to a defensive style, which is not our strength? He goes,
yeah.
I would open up the floodgates, play to your strength, which is your offense.
Win 7-4 if you have to.
Yeah, that's it. You got to win 7-4. You're not good enough to win 2-1.
Yeah,
and I think hopefully starting last night, that's what the Canucks realize is, hey, we got a good goalie. We got a good offense. Let's try to win 6-5, 7-4 because we cannot win 2-1.
One thing you said, one thing you said I want to touch on just before I get to sat here is that Sandsmeal passion and you know, something else that he mentioned is he wants to create an identity. And he'd been sitting and waiting in the wing, is kind of holding his breath, not really speaking his mind. Obviously, Jim and John were running the show, and maybe they disagreed on certain things. But after the fire Benning chance, the sell the team chance, that jersey toss, you know, the absolute disgust up and down in the organization, that's, like you said, one of the key defining moments, you know, call it the TSN turning point, I think, in building and creating a culture and finding an identity for this team. And Bruce Boudreau spoke about that as well. He wants to have a team that's in your face, you know, aggressive, up and down the ice, pushing the pace, but especially he wants to create that identity of being hard to play against. And we've been crying for this in this, you know, connection for so long. Like, why is this team so soft? Where is the fucking physical play? Where is the hitting? What's their identity? And it just got worse and worse and worse. And to hear that, like you said, breath of fresh air. I can't wait to see what is created with this identity process.
You know how bad it was within Canuck Nation that TSN started their show in the last week with Canuck News. Even though Austin Matthews shaved his mustache, they started with Canuck News. I mean, they
or fucking Campbell had a barbecue or something. Like, what the hell?
Shocked.
Anyway, Sat, let's hear your thoughts. How are you feeling about what's going on and the changes and just the first result after under Bruce Boudreau here?
Yeah, you know what? Like, kind of echoing what Nav said a bit, I haven't really been paying too much attention to the Canucks this year because, you know, I have a brand new son, which I'm really proud to say that I have that. And it hasn't been a priority. But it made it easier to stay away from the Canucks because they were so shit.
Yeah.
Because there are so many problems with the team. And, you know, that yesterday or a couple of days ago on Sunday when that news kind of hit that, okay, Travis Green's gone. Nolan Baumgartner's gone. Jim Benning is gone. And whoever the hell the other guy Weisbrod is, no one knows who he is. He's gone too.
And why is Jason King still here? I mean,
whatever. So that's all, you know, they're gone. So that instantly said to me, okay, I'm renewed. What is going to happen? Where's the team going to go? It didn't even matter who they hired at that point on Sunday night. It says, okay, you know, Boudreau's coming in to report, but it's news. It's positive.
Yeah.
It's a direction in a directionless see, I'll say.
Yeah.
And then Smeal's press conference, passionate, aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really liked about it was he wasn't afraid to cut Francesco off. It's like, oh, let me jump in here, right? Like, he took the reins. He's not afraid of him,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It's good like point, yeah. tandem. So, I mean, if he becomes a president, it's going to work well because he can talk to Francesco and tell him, you know, what's up.
Yeah.
You know, our podcast here is called The Larshcast after great Tommy Larshide. You know what? If this doesn't work, we may as well call it the Steamer Cast.
Yeah, the Steam Cast.
He is the absolute Canuck through and through.
Yeah, he is.
And you know what? He's a fan at heart now, too. He runs the team.
Yeah.
What more can we say, right? What more can we
Well, want? I'll say something more. I think he might be in line to become the next president of hockey operations. Now, I know Nav maybe disagrees, and I don't know how you guys feel, Ryan and Sat, but in my opinion, I mean, he has enough experience behind the scenes in the executive room. I think 30 years or 40 years. Whereas Trevor Linden didn't have that experience. He came into a brand new situation from the NHLPA, was not in the room. Like, he was not making these deals or talking to the general managers and the other presidents of hockey operations like Michael in the past, you know. And then at this point, you know, that experience, it amounts to something, you know. It's not nothing. And the way he has this passion and cares so much about the team, he's a Canuck through and through. I just feel like if you wanted to go in that direction, I'd be okay with it. I'd be absolutely okay to see Sandsmeal become the president. But obviously, I know you want to find somebody with, you know, maybe a better resume, more success in the hockey world, you know, but
like a Lawrence Gilliman, maybe.
Yeah. Like, well, even he hasn't been in that position either. Like, he hasn't been a former president or former GM. I mean, you talk about Mike Gillis, you want to bring him back to be president. That'd be another good move too. But it's, are they going to go that way? You know, I was just listening to the People Show and they were talking about why does Canuck Nation always think about the past? Like, go back, you know, and not move forward. And it's something funny that is kind of unique to this market. I agree with Satya Shah on that.
Pierre LeBrun is not Canuck Nation. And he's the one that's talking.
No.
Well, he said it's a possibility. Right. He didn't say that they were going to, like, it's going to happen.
Why would he mention it?
No, but he's not wrong. I think what Sat said is right. The problem is, why is that even, like, why is it up to debate? Why? It's not the media that's doing this. It's the fans. Oh, we want Gillis back. Even where Benning was fired for the last year, we want Mike Gillis. I agree. Stop living in the past. If you've won championships, you know, if Gillis would have won that title in 2011, if he would have won that title in 1994, like, yo, let's bring him back. You haven't won anything. Why do we always look at the past? We got a loser of a franchise.
I have a response to that, Nev. So people, when they say they want Mike Gillis, they don't necessarily want the man Mike Gillis. They want what he represented.
His progressive nature.
They want to be on the forefront of analytics when, you know, Gillis was looking at analytics back then. They want sleep cycles. They want all this, you know, top quality, put the money into the team, around the team that's going to make a mediocre player a superstar, right? That's going to make an Alex Burrows a game 7 goal scoring winner in overtime. Like, that's what they want to see. And everything that's going to allow those players to succeed to the best of their ability and beyond, that's what they want from their general manager.
They want to see an actual investment into the players that goes above and beyond just what's on the ice and off the ice in terms of the training. They want to go beyond that to the next level, like Mike Gillis, he started to do the sleep science and you know.
Okay, fair enough. But, like, to me, it's like one of the things that I'm excited about with Bruce Boudreau is he's a veteran coach.
Yeah.
You know what? He's been there. He's done that. We always have a tendency, let's bring in Trevor Linden. And everybody knows how much I love Trevor Linden. No experience. Now we're talking about Stan Smeal. That guy, he's been involved with the Canucks for the last 40 years or
he's been in hockey ops. Like, he's been there.
But he's never really had – but he's never really done anything. He's never been –
we don't know what he's done, but he's learned for a fucking long time.
He's had an office. He's been there forever. He's been there for everybody. He has no experience, right? And we bring in a coach like Travis Green prior to this, no experience. I want veteran leadership on this team. Yeah. I want a president that's done it. I'm not saying him, but like a guy like George McPhee. Somebody that's been there, done that. Then if you bring in a guy like that, then you can bring in like a Gilman as a general manager because you have a guy on top to say, hey.
Nav's cutting out there. That's okay. But I mean, Nav's making a couple of great points there. He's probably going to cut in all of a sudden, but before he does, or if he does, I want to welcome Joey Pitt to the show as well. You just joined here. Joey,
hey guys, how's it going?
You know, last night was wild, Joey. You were there in the Lars Shatter section with me, and you were there with Laura, your Canucks Twitter love story girlfriend, which is amazing by itself. But, Joey, I just want to ask, I thought that was one of the greatest, you know, games I've ever been to in my life. I don't know, suffering a little bit for it today, a little hungover there, but in your opinion, how was that atmosphere? How excited are you going forward? Just talk us through it, man.
Well, I mean, first of all, you want to talk about suffering for it. I went to the Giants game on Friday. I announced both Abbotsford Canucks games on Saturday and Sunday, and then I went to the Vancouver game on Monday. The fact that I can even talk right now is a miracle. So that's the first thing I got to say. But when it comes to the game, since I've started going to Canucks games on a regular basis, which would have been the 14-15 season, the first game I ever went to, Jonathan Quick and the LA Kings shut out the Canucks 4-0. So I got to say, last night was pretty great seeing the Vancouver Canucks shut out the LA Kings 4-0. It was a roundabout way of me coming back to how I started attending Canucks games. I think Barbecue Bruce is a perfect man for the job. One thing that was getting kicked around Twitter a lot was the Washington Capitals record in 07-08 before Boudreau took over as coach and after Boudreau took over as coach. Their record was something like 7-12-2.
Very similar to what the Canucks record is right now. Yeah,
and he ended up like the rest of the season, he lost 10 games overtime and regulation combined, right? Yeah. And they ended up
becoming first in the division.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know what everybody's going to say, he had the greatest goal scorer of all time on his roster. Absolutely. But the Canucks have a lot of talent. And if you guys really think that a guy who has so much veteran experience as a coach, he's been there, done that, sure, the only team that could really take him out of the playoffs was Pittsburgh back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, remember, everybody remembers the Washington-Pittsburgh one-sided series.
Yeah.
Series is. However, a guy like Boudreau knows how to bring the best out of his star players. And yeah, we saw it in literally his first morning skate with the team. We saw him off to the side with
talking to Brock Besser. Yeah.
Yeah. He's talking to Brock Besser. What happens when the game starts? Brock Besser scores a power play goal, 13 game goalless drought snapped.
Yeah.
Just like that. You don't think a new coach has something to do with that?
You know, I want to touch on what something that you mentioned there about the Capitals. A lot of that playoff failure, you mentioned it, it's the Penguins and Crosby, but also it was Ovechkin. He wasn't ready to win. You know, he wasn't at that point in his career where he actually gave enough fucks in the playoffs. And you saw a different Ovechkin. And part of that, it could be the coaching, Barry Trotz, you know, coming in, and maybe he, you know, had a different approach getting through to Ovechkin. But in my opinion, I saw a completely different player the year that the Capitals won. You know, it was Ovechkin and Kuznetsov were the top two players in the league, maybe in the playoffs, you know? And so that's something that also, it boils down to, like, playoff failure boils down to a lot of different ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of different factors are you come to play. But to say that it's all that failure or lack of success in the playoffs is all on Boudreau, I don't think that's really fair. I think it's a little bit, it doesn't do him justice. I think the fact that you can have such dominant regular season teams that just don't have that success in the playoffs because you run into a hot team or you run into superstars like Sidney Crosby or Jonathan Toews or Anze Kopitar, you know, all these guys that could just take over. Jonathan Quick, you know, how many teams were like Chicago? They could have gone three straight in a row, you know, the Kings took them out because they were like Jonathan Quick was unstoppable. Well, in 2000.
There's a reason why the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win in sports.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's, you know, the regular season is 82 games. And what does that tell you? That just gives you a seating.
Yeah.
And then you still have to win 16 more games, right? That's another quarter to half of a season, right?
Yeah.
It's a long, long, drawn out mess. So it's a war of attrition at that point. You could have all the talent in the world, as we saw in 2011.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the body to withstand that beating, it doesn't matter how talented you are, how good you are. There's a little bit of luck that plays into it too, right?
Yeah.
The fact that Bruce Boudreau hasn't won a Stanley Cup or has a lot of playoff success, I mean, there's circumstance in a lot of places, and I'm not giving excuses.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so many coaches in the league that are
very great coaches. Same thing with him before he won. It was in Nashville, the same position. No playoff success.
Nashville is a great team every year in, year out, but sometimes you just need that extra bit of something you don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, even look historically, like Pat Quinn never got a cup. Pat Burns, who's arguably the best coach in the history of the Toronto Maple Leafs, he never got a cup, and he was a tremendous coach. Not everybody's going to be that Scotty Bowman who's just going to win them nonstop. Like,
well, look at Paul Maurice, right? He won early, then never again.
Doesn't want since,
Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, comparing it to another sport, like, you know, TJ, you know, you'll understand, is like, who's one of the greatest coaches in the NFL today?
Bill Belichick. Andy Reid.
Hasn't won? Andy Reid that hasn't won till he won.
Yeah, no, good example. Yeah,
you're only a choker till you win. I mean, if you consider coaching, people say Andy Reid's one of the best coaches in the history of the NFL, but he just couldn't get over the hump. So I agree with Sat. You know what? Winning a Stanley Cup is extremely difficult to do, and I don't consider Bruce Boudreau a choker.
Yeah,
I mean, he took Anaheim three seasons in a row to Game 7. He's not on the ice. I mean, he did the best he could.
Let's relax, though. I mean,
Bruce,
we're talking about the Stanley Cup in the playoffs. Yeah. Bruce Boudreau is here to right the ship and see what the fuck happens.
Well, let's talk about how he's going to right the ship. And I want to talk about, you know, in particular.
Can we talk about why the ship needs to be righted?
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Talk about it in a second. But there's some things I just want to, like, touch on when it comes to Boudreau and things that I noticed again from the game. You know, why was Travis Green refusing to play Pettersson on the penalty kill if Pettersson wanted to be on the penalty kill? Like, answer that question to me. Why would you, like, deny that opportunity when your penalty kill is historically the worst in NHL history? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the worst penalty kill of all time, and you're not going to change up the players? Like, what's the rationale there? You know,
it's injury, man. You're just afraid of injury.
But injuries aside, Jonathan Toews, Pavel Datsyuk, Kopitar, all these guys that we kind of look at Pettersson and say he's a good two-way player. coming up in the first 2 years of his career, you know, from a rookie to a sophomore, he's demonstrated this ability to make defensive plays and to show that hustle and you know, go all out to block shots, or, you know, going on the ground. I mean, he falls on the ground a lot himself, but you see him diving out there, you know, sticking his body out in different positions to block shots, to save, to block passing lanes. He obviously gives a shit about the defensive side of hockey. How do you not give him the opportunity?
The strategy that they employed is wrong to begin with. They're stationary with Travis Green and against Nolan Baumgartner, right?
Bingo.
So that right strategy's there. Changed. And when you're going to attack and being aggressive, then a player like Pettersson can work. Just like Hoglander can't work in a stationary system.
Yeah. So you're saying that Travis Green's stationary system is sit back. It didn't play to Pettersson's strengths. I mean, that's a pretty decent argument, I would say, but that's not an excuse. I mean, you could teach defensive players, like players that have that defensive prowess, to play your defensive system. But why would you deny it? Like, look, Quinn Hughes said it today. He basically said, you know, yeah, you know, if you do that for Petey, he's going to want to run through a wall for you. You know, that he's not throwing a shot at Green, but it's like a breath of fresh air for Petey.
He's making $7 million. He's making $7 million a year. I hate that frigging bullshit. This isn't beer league. You're making $7 million. You better run through a wall for somebody. All right.
Well, there are factors at play, though. Coaching can affect players negatively, especially if they're not, like, they're in a slump already and you're not playing, or you're not, like, you know, giving them opportunities to what they, you know, hope to achieve and what they want to do on the ice. And you're taking away almost like an aspect of his game that he still excels at, even if he's not producing. He was still playing defensively. He was still back checking. You saw some of that hustle. Yeah. But there is something deeper going on with Pettersson that's fairly obvious to everybody that watches him play, the body language. Yesterday, for example, prime opportunities to shoot the puck, plenty of opportunities on the power play, regular, like, even strength, but he didn't shoot. He's hesitating to shoot. He doesn't have that shoot
first mentality. And then there was the penalty shot. And then there was the penalty shot, which he missed the net on.
Yeah. Like, there is something deeply
he would normally walk Pettersson into the net.
And I hope Boudreaux can unlock it, because we need Pettersson to go get going if we want to make the playoffs here, you know, go on a run.
I love Pettersson, but, you know, I'll be honest with you. This year, I've been kind of really disgusted with his play. Like, there was that one play where I forgot what game it was, but, you know, the guy had an empty net and he's skating behind him and he just gave up on the play. I always thought this guy, I don't care. You know, we always talk he's going to be the Pavel Datsyuk kind of player. He may not score you 50 goals, but he might prevent you 25 and score 25. So in essence, he's got you 50, right? But his attitude this year, like, I don't like it. Hopefully there's something injury-wise that's wrong with him, because his attitude today to this year, till this point, 26, 27 games in the year, has been really off-putting. I mean, he doesn't seem like the same kid that we fell in love with, not even play-wise, just attitude-wise.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's, you know, part of growing up.
There. He looks got a fat lip on. Yeah, fair enough.
It's part of growing up, right? Like, How many superstars were, you know, really consistently performing well 3-4 years into their career? Look at Nathan MacKinnon. He's the best, one of the best players in the league now. Go look at his first few years. He was great to start, and then he fell.
He had a major drop off, and then
hell, if you want to look at Canucks historically, Pavel Bure had a great rookie season, won the Calder. Following that, back-to-back 60-goal years. Then he started getting into injury issues, right? 95, 96, he was gone half the year. 96, 97, he only got like 18 goals. He wasn't Pavel Bure. Took him a while to get that form back. And then in 97, 98, despite the dumpster fire going on around him, the dude still put up 50 goals. Yep. And then when he went to Florida, he kept scoring, right? Despite the fact that his knees were gone. It's just a matter of a mental hump that he has to get over that came with his injury. And I think Pettersson has the mental toughness to get over this.
Well,
it's
does
just
he?
A matter of how it's I
that's a concern for me.
No, that's fair. It's a 100% a fair concern, but I do think with the right leadership behind him, I think Boudreaux will be able to unlock that in him.
I hope so. I hope you're right, because he is an integral aspect or player on this roster. I mean, the last couple seasons, people were talking about a $10 million deal for this guy. I mean, how many people in Canucks Nation are so thankful that this is only a 3-year deal for him? You know, this is like we're seeing a different Pettersson altogether, completely different player. It doesn't even look similar in any way to what that rookie Pettersson was or that sophomore PD was, you know? And there is something, in my opinion, like it's hard. I can't diagnose somebody, you know, across a TV screen or, you know, just as a fan, but just his body language, you can see things are off. And I really hope that Boudreaux gets through to him, because players' careers could really turn for the worse if they don't get over that mental hump. You know, Quinn Hughes talked about it when they were in Michigan, how PD was always on his phone, you know, going through social media, and then Hughes would be like, get off the phone, you know, and he wouldn't listen to him. That tells me that maybe Pettersson is reading all these comments, like negative comments about him, or just kind of getting lost in a fake world. Like, social media is not a real world. It's completely online, and you know, people live behind veils, and they feel secure in their homes to shout and scream at and say a lot of terrible, nasty things sometimes, things that they like wouldn't say you know, face to face. And so it's a completely different world. I just hope PD is going to get the right advice, the right coaching here.
Get over it. Have you ever seen Canuck Twitter? And it's probably not going to last very long, so let's enjoy these 48, 72 hours, whatever long it is. Have you ever seen Canuck Twitter so united and so just like all happy? Even the media members are all happy. I don't think I've ever seen it since I've been on Twitter. I don't know about you guys.
There's one guy out there who's just still trying to find fucking problems.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
I mean, the only thing I can really equate this to is the last couple games, like when the Sedins announced their retirement and everybody was just all together. Okay. It's like, man, the Twins, what a time. And even people who like hated the Canucks over the Twins' careers were coming in, like Chicago fans were being like, man, like they were great competitors. They put up great series against us and all that. And like everybody was just came together. That's the only thing that's even close. And even then it was due to a retirement of a lot of two guys that a lot of people grew up fearing for, right? So even then, you can't really count that as a time where people were unified around the team because the Canucks suck, right? So
this, this is shocking. I'm reading some of the tweets, and I know who you're talking about, Sav. We're not going to name drop him because he's a jackass, but most people, everyone's just happy. Everyone's happy with this hiring, and now they're like, you know, there's motivation and thinking what's going to happen next. So who's going to be the I've never seen this. I mean, TJ, you've been on Twitter longer than probably the rest of us. At least I know for myself, I'll speak for myself, is it's always been a faction. At least for the last 24 hours, 48 hours, I haven't seen that as much. It'll probably go back to us arguing over something again, you know, something trivial. But well, right now, they're all in the same boat.
Well, at the very least, everybody now knows that it's not about being a Benning bro, but we are all Canucks bros. And Canucks bro. Like, but it was never about shit, the. It was never about the Benning. I hate that shit too. Except for the fact that now I'm a boo bro. So,
you know, you're not.
Anyways.
DJ, look out your window. Oh my God. Is that Jim Benning?
Hey.
DJ, open the
you're
door.
You're not supposed to be Jim's able to here. See that.
So, like, we, you know, have a really good team. Like, you know, we're really trying.
Hey,
like,
man, why you got to go and make fun of the guy's language? Kick a man when he's down.
Okay, you know what? With all due respect to Jim Benning, you know, love him. 90% of the people hate him. We all can agree that Travis Green's probably going to get a job again relatively, you know, soon, whether that be as an assistant or as a head coach somewhere. Is Jim Benning ever going to get a job, at least in upper management again for the rest of his career?
Well, I think
AGM and think again.
Yeah, like AGM for sure.
AGM. Like
his drafting is too good to not be like considered by another one of the 31 clubs in this league. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, even if you keep him entirely away from signing people. Yeah.
Now, Mike Milbury had a job for a long fucking time.
I think. Yeah, but that's. Stupid. I think. Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you
no
one thing.
There's no social.
I'll
media.
Tell you.
There's
I'll
no
tell you one thing. Mike Milbury. I'll tell you one thing. You know, a lot of people were saying that this roster was bad. This team was bad because of the roster's construction. And if you look at Bruce Boudreau, veteran coach, which we desperately needed, and he comes in here and if he makes a difference, he takes this team and they starts playing the way that they were supposed to play, pushing the pace offensively, unleashing all this potential for all these players on this roster up and down the lineup that weren't producing, that weren't playing to their strengths. If this team turns it around and goes on a run and maybe they make the playoffs, then Jim Benning is probably going to get a couple looks from different organizations. Maybe not as a general manager, but as an AGM at the very least, because what's going to end up being known is that it was in fact coaching that held this team back. Last year, one of the worst seasons we've ever witnessed as fans. Obviously, we weren't there in the arena, but it was hard to watch on TV. And Travis Green, you know, there was a reason, I think. I don't know if it was financial, but he didn't get an offer until, like, the season was over. Maybe they were thinking about going in a different direction, and they should have gone in a different direction because that was the final dagger for Jim Benning, in my opinion, as we see what happens here. I believe, you know, Boudreau's done it before in Washington. I believe he's going to be able to turn around this team to have them play that aggressive style, you know, on the penalty kill, aggressive, you know, on the forecheck, very aggressive, pinching down low, going to the net, playing to your strengths. He wants to play behind the net more. You know, all these things considered, that this roster is going to thrive with. And if that happens, you know, I guarantee you Jim Benning gets another look. If it doesn't, then we'll finally understand it was roster construction. And he probably won't, or he may not, but think about it that way. If this team turns around, how can you not sit there at home and be like, well, maybe Jim Benning's roster wasn't the actual issue.
Yeah, right? You know what? You know, okay, Jim Benning, there's a lot of qualities that of his management that we obviously didn't see as fans, as media, whatever you want to say. There's a reason why a guy like Francesco Iacolini and the Iacolini family kept him around for so long. They were so quick to fire Gillis, fire Nonis, do all these quick moves. And for whatever reason, you know, Jim Benning got a long, long leash. And if it wasn't for his lack of communication skills, which made it very easy to beat on him and dissect him, he couldn't articulate his plan, right? And that's a failing because he doesn't have those skills. Now, his hockey brain, I mean, you can say that he made some bad trades, bad transactions, whatever. But he still had a lot of good, and there's a lot of skill there in unearthing talent, right? I mean, Brock Besser in the low 20s. There's an eye there, yeah. Right? Vasily Podkolzin getting him at, you know, a 10th or whatever, 9th, 10th, 11th, whatever it was. I mean, people knew he was going to be good, but he still got him, and he looks like a gamer. Höglander, Demko, right? Like, his drafting alone, as Joey mentioned before, is going to get him a job somewhere.
We just lost Nav again, but just getting back in.
He agrees,
good points, though, Sat. You made some good points there, and I think I want to like address that other elephant in the room is where everybody was talking about what the hell did John Weisbrot do? Well, one thing that he could have done better for Jim Benning was be more of that spokesperson for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why wouldn't he just step up and articulate the plan? If Jim Benning, obviously, people were having issues with the way he talked and how he articulated himself and his pauses and saying, like, you know, I know all the time, right? But at the same time, you got a guy who's fucking your right-hand man. You know, he's not doing shit publicly. Like, why can't he be the front man? Why can't... So there's a lot of issues that were up and down, you know, in the organization. But at that top level, at that management level, that's where they had a major flaw. And it wasn't... In this market, you know, for whatever reason, people want to hear, like, that concise and clear articulation. They want to hear that messaging, you know, because it's a different hockey market here. I mean, a lot of people understand the game differently than you would in Manitoba, for example, you know, where there they talk more about the actual details of the hockey game because they're all growing up, you know, immersed in hockey through and through. They got rinks in their backyards. They're playing all, you know, they want to talk about the coach's strategy more. Here, people want to talk about the management's plan more and the future plans and prospects.
I think
development here, and all that, right?
People here don't want to be communicated with. They want to be talked to and spoken to and provided lip service. And they want someone who's forceful and is going to put them in their place.
Yeah.
Like, you look at a guy like Mike Gillis, he didn't give a shit who you were.
Yeah.
He put you in your place. Brian Burke put you in your place. And Brian Burke is so well thought of in this city, in kind of everywhere he went as a manager and an executive. He has nothing but nice things to say about Jim Benning, right? And his hockey mind. He doesn't have to say anything, but whenever he was on the local radio, he was always sticking up for him, saying, you guys don't know what he's capable of and how smart he actually is.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, his radio
sticking up for Benning, but like it's a true fact. It's just to ignore certain
things. His radio appearance was not. He didn't speak the best there. I think he kind of sounded like more of a mafia boss than a billionaire Canucks owner there. But his last appearance here, the last presser they did with Stan Smeal, I think Francesco actually did quite a good job. Actually, he obviously a visible frustration and you can tell that he cares. He does care. He's not somebody who's just nonchalant. You know, doesn't give a shit about the team. He actually does care, and they like to see that. And Stan Smeal gives a damn. And you love to see that. And Bruce Boudreau gives a damn because he was talking about how he couldn't wait to get fucking back in the game, you know. And so all these things considered, I'm really excited going forward. And maybe that's why we're back, right? It was hard to talk about the team in a negative way or when it's miserable. Like Nav was mentioning the apathy.
Nothing to talk about, man.
That like, apathy.
Rehash the same shit over again.
And that apathy hit me hard too. I mean, there was a couple points where I was just not paying attention to or not even looking and watching the game or the scores. You know, it was hard to be a Canucks fan for a while.
You're gonna say, "Oh yeah, so I'm so happy we beat the Montreal Canadiens. We beat the Ottawa Senators." Holy!
And if you keep talking in those miserable ways, it kind of seeps into your life as well. You know, and misery loves company, right? I mean, those are all true sayings. So, going forward, you know, whether or not they make the playoffs, I know they're gonna play much better hockey. The brand of hockey, the style of play, everything's gonna be exciting again. West Coast Express times two. Maybe that era comes back with the run and gun. And I'm just so, you know, look, for fuck's sakes, no more dump and chase, boys. Let's fucking go, you know?
Bruce, there it is.
Bruce, there it is, baby. And that is it for us here on this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy it. And give us your feedback. Give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And just, you know, if you enjoy hearing and or you want to hear different things, give us your ideas. We're open to suggestions. We're here for the fans, by the fans, for the fans, all day, every day. All right. Cheers, guys. Good night.